Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is the Sheriff Tom to my Sonic, Kyle JCRB Krause.
That's accurate. I'm going to give you that one. You are correct. I am the bland everyman to your cool, outgoing personality that everybody loves. That's me.
No. I'm the round, hairy thing that people come to look at, and you're the competent one that makes sure we get anywhere.
I'm the one behind the scenes that makes sure stuff happens, and that's fine. That's all I ever want to be. I don't know why I host a show. You'd think I just would want to produce it in the background, but whatever. It's fine. How are you doing, Ian?
I'm doing just fine. As always, I'm working on a bunch of stuff that I can't talk about, and at this point, it's not even fun to tease anymore. Just things are coming! How about you?
Well, I wish I had something cool to say I'm working on or doing, but not really. I will say that, just to put it out there at the top of the show, is that sometime this week, in celebration of recent events, this episode and the Sonic movie and, you know, the Sonic Renaissance, I suppose it's going on, the Sonic Resurgence. I am going to be streaming sometime this week. I don't know when exactly. Keep an eye on the Bumblecast Twitter for announcements. But I'm going to be streaming Sonic 1 at some point. And so that's going to be fun. It's the only classic Sonic game we haven't streamed yet, I guess. Mainline. I haven't streamed Spinball either, which I will eventually someday, but I'm gonna do Sonic 1 first.
Spinball's more of an outlier, but yeah, okay.
It's not a mainline game, I know. It's a spinoff, but I still like Spinball. But I'm gonna play Sonic 1 because we haven't played it yet, so I'm gonna play it and I'm probably gonna beat it in like an hour. It's not very long, so it's the only classic Sonic game we haven't really streamed in some form yet, so I'm going to be doing that this week, so keep an eye out for it. I don't know exactly what day it will be. It will be after the show comes out. So, but keep an eye out on the Twitter, and I'll let you guys know. And then I will also be releasing the archive version of that stream early. You know, we gotta capitalize on this stuff, Ian. Timing.
Exactly.
It matters. And also because, you know, it's fun, and we love you guys. So I want to give you some extra stuff and, you know, just have some fun because, you know, it's a big deal with Sonic, and we talk about Sonic a lot on this show, so it makes sense. So absolutely, we're doing that. We're doing that. I'm doing that. So keep an eye out for that.
So, as everyone has been anticipating for a while now, we're going to be talking about the Sonic movie.
Yeah, let's, I guess, just jump right into it, I suppose. Spoiler-free.
Same as always. Spoiler-free here at the start, and then we'll get into more details later on, but we'll give you plenty of heads up in the event you haven't seen it yet. And then if you don't want to get spoiled, you know, follow that link over to the Q&A and just hop on over and we'll see you there.
Yep, let's do it to it.
So Kyle, what were your thoughts?
Oh, we're starting with mine, huh?
Yeah,
we're teasing the fans who want to hear your opinion on it by starting with mine first. I got it. I liked it. It wasn't It wasn't amazing cinema. I wasn't blown away. There wasn't like a, you know, massive crossover moment of like everybody coming together, like, you know, suddenly portals open up to alternate universes and weird characters start pouring through that nobody's ever heard of. And that's fine. It didn't need to be anything that like that. It didn't need to be an art house film with feelings and introspection. It's a Sonic movie. That's what you get.
That said, I thought they had a surprising amount of thoughtful, emotional moments for our little blue hedgehog.
I thought that it was a movie, actually, surprisingly, it had a lot of heart for a big-budget Hollywood film. I was kind of surprised. I was surprised in a lot of ways by this movie. Mm-hmm. My expectations were pretty low. They did rise a little bit once the early reviews and early buzz started coming in. I'm like, okay, maybe it's not so bad. Maybe it's not going to be completely awful. And then from the previews, though, I wasn't expecting it to be utterly unwatchable, except for, you know, the initial trailer. Mm-hmm. That would have made this movie pretty much unwatchable if they had stuck with that design. But luckily, they corrected course and realized the error of their ways and, you know, came out better for it. So I'm overall, I'd say I'm pretty pleased with it. I feel like it's a good jumping off point for more stories to tell in future movies, which it seems like will probably happen considering how successful this one has been.
Yeah,
and it's kind of actually, I'm surprised at how successful it has been. I was not really expecting it to do very well. I think I thought a lot of people would be kind of turned off by that initial trailer, but it seems like the redesign sort of restored some of the goodwill that
they marketed it super, super hard.
They really did. I was actually kind of surprised. I really have expected this to be just kind of something that flew under the radar as sort of a cheap cash in just to say you have a license.
Well, the rumors I had heard leading up to it was that this project had been caught in development hell for years.
Yeah.
It had been bounced between two studios, and then to have all of the CG assets more or less redone at the 11th hour to get anything back.
Right.
They really needed to put butts in seats. So, I mean, they could have also just let it die on the vine and, you know, sucked it up, take their losses and moved on.
Right.
But the fact that they threw a lot of weight behind it, quite possibly funded by Olive Garden, I guess.
Hey, well, wherever you can get the money from, I suppose.
That and to a degree, I guess it's just a testament to the power of Sonic. I mean, the little blue guy's been running for almost 25 years now.
30.
Almost 30 years now.
Yeah. Remember, this is 91.
Yeah, and it's 2020 now. Jeez, oh, Pete.
God. Yeah.
And I've been around for almost half of it. Oy.
Yeah, and I've been into Sonic
half of it, worked half of it.
And I've been enjoying Sonic games since 1992, so... Yeah, we've been in this for a while, Ian. We've been mired in this Blue Hedgehog's whatever for too long. It's okay. We still love you, Sonic.
So, on my end, going in with the initial trailer, as bad as it looked, I thought it would at least be a memorable dumpster fire.
That's what I was expecting, yeah.
Kind of those cult classics, so bad that it's good, you remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when there was talk of revamping it, it's like, okay, well now it's just going to be a mediocre children's film. It's going to be Smurfs. It's going to be Alvin and the Chipmunks. Something that, you know, bombs in the domestic market, does okay in China, and gets a few direct-to-video sequels. We'll never see it again.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in California doing some work at the Sega offices, and I got to talk to Tyson Hess, and he said he was involved not just with the redesigns, but also a little bit with some of the scripting. It's like, oh, well, maybe this actually stands a bit of a chance of being watchable.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to get my hopes set too high because it was either going to be super awful or it was going to be so mediocre that it just kind of fizzled out. We've been back and forth on the Super Mario Brothers movie, and
we still need to do an episode on that.
We do. But regardless of your opinion on it, it is memorable. It has made its mark in cinema history, and whether you love it or you hate it, it sticks around. That was my biggest concern coming into this, was it's not going to be memorable. It's going to be a flash in the pan. You forget about it. And I'm very happy to say that it's not. It actually is solid on just about every level. It's not going to win an Oscar.
No.
It's not high cinema, but it's a solid little kids film. James Marsden and Tika Sumpter are a delight together. Usually when you throw humans into the Sonic mix, it drags it down. But their banter, their chemistry together on the screen was really fun.
Kind of
one of the things that was
James Marsden kind of surprised me. I mostly know him as Cyclops in the X-Men movies, and he's
right
there. He's not very memorable or anything. He's just kind of boring. But here,
they didn't really give him a lot to work with.
No, they didn't. But here, he's actually pretty fun. He's got good comedic timing, and I enjoyed, like you said, the banter between him and his wife.
It was really good. Everybody interacted with the CG elements in a very good way. It, you know, when you have people kind of more or less pantomiming to something that's not there, you can sometimes you can see them, you know, acting towards nothing. Like the Star Wars prequels, you can tell that there's a lack of urgency. There's this kind of dead-eyed rote motion to the heavily CGI'd moments because the actors have nothing to work with. It's just green screen blocks. But James and Tika and everybody else react to Sonic and the world around them. I won't say in a believable way because it's played for laughs, but it's an earnest way. It's an engaging way. It's a entertaining way. It's actually got some effort put into, clear effort put into it.
Yeah. That's also kind of surprising. You figure they'd kind of just phone it in and not care. But it seems like there was at least some level of, you know, some level of respect and reverence for the original property and the, just the overall substance of the character, rather than just churning out complete and utter garbage just to say you did. So
another thing I was worried about going by the trailers was Jim Carrey's Robotnik, because the trailers made it seem like here's 90s Jim Carrey again. I know we talked about this on a previous episode, and
yeah,
90s Jim Carrey is funny, but that wasn't the Robotnik I wanted. Robotnik to me is someone who's very eccentric, who's very theatrical, but also has this underlying tone of menace where you're kind of laughing at him until you realize, oh, he's actually dangerous. And seeing the film, that's what we got.
Yeah.
That is exactly what we got. And I'm super happy with his Robotnik because he has the theatrics, he has the over the top goofiness, but he is abusive, he is domineering, and he is threatening. And it's, ooh, it's good stuff.
Yeah. It's a slightly different portrayal than what we get in the games and what we've gotten in comics before. But I'm okay with that, because Sonic is also a little bit of a different portrayal, too.
Oh, so, yeah, we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah, but I can still, it's still appreciably, at least, inspired by, it's very much in reverence to the original characterization. So I appreciate that. I like that.
There's a couple moments towards the end where it almost feels like he's channeling Mike Pollock, at least vocally. It's like, huh, that actually kind of gave me a chill. That's a little too close.
Yeah. And toward the end, as he gets more and more unhinged, it's very fun to watch. And it brings out a lot more of that side of Robotnik that we're more familiar with.
So if you're going into this film as a game purist, this is not the origin story you're going to expect. This is its own thing, to be sure.
Yes.
But it is its own thing, and it owns that.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. It's a fun kids film. In the theater, there were decidedly moments where I was hearing the adults in the audience chuckle, and then moments where the kids were laughing really hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a little bit for everybody. And it's very fast paced, which, yeah, Sonic movie, gotta go fast. But it doesn't linger where it doesn't need to. You know, it does what each scene really needs to do. It has some solid jokes. The action sequences, especially the finale, are really solid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fun.
It doesn't overstay its welcome either. It's a nice, snappy hour and a half, and you're in and out. It's good.
Yeah, it's a fun little movie.
After all these freaking super long, over 2 hour, almost 2.5 hour superhero movies, it's kind of nice to just be there for, you know, an hour and a half and you're done. You're gone.
Yeah, yeah, it's
That doesn't
happen. Good. Go see.
That don't happen very much anymore. But yes, if you're a Sonic fan, I don't see why you wouldn't enjoy this, especially if you're on the younger side. It's definitely, it's got a lot to appeal to everybody, though. And it, you know, does pretty well. I'd say that the critical rating is maybe a little too low, and the public rating is maybe a little too high. I think reality is somewhere maybe in the middle, and that's perfectly fine. I think it's a completely fun and watchable Sonic movie. So,
up here in the Great White North, instead of President's Day long weekend, we have Family Day long weekend.
Uh-huh.
And this is the perfect film for that. You know, yep. Get your kids, go to the theater, have your popcorn, watch a Sonic movie. Everyone's going to be coming out with a smile. It's a good time.
It's good. Go see it.
Well, I think we've exhausted all the generals we can say about it. So yep. We're going to get into like the cameo stuff, the Easter eggs, a little more in-depth thought on some of the characterization and the lore. So if you don't want to be spoiled, we'll go just go to Q&A. We'll see you in a bit.
Yep.
Last warning.
See ya.
Spoilers inbound.
Bye. Unless you're not going. Okay. So, Ian, what? Uh-huh. Go ahead. Spill it. Spill the tea, man.
I think the most interesting thing for me was the characterization of Sonic.
Yeah.
Like,
a little bit of a
Ben Schwartz.
Different character.
Ben Schwartz does an excellent job with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I'm so used to him as Dewey in the new DuckTales. That's all I can hear.
That's all I can hear, too. That's all I can hear when I hear him. It's like, oh, it's just Dewey Duck. It's Dewey Duck saying Dewey Duck things. He's just wearing a Sonic costume. It still
works for the character.
It does. It does. Fine. It does. But it's just kind of that weird mental thing that I had, especially, was like, oh, it's just Dewey Duck.
He's so much more childlike in this one.
Yeah.
There's a degree of innocence and youth that I don't think we've seen in Sonic since, gosh, Sad AM, really.
Yeah, and even then.
Because he's always there was a lot less snark, but it was more like a gentler Bugs Bunny, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know, it was still the high energy, it was still the positive attitude, the heroics, but without the edge that standard Sonic has.
Mm-hmm.
But it still works. It's still recognizably Sonic.
Yeah, there's some reluctance to the call to action for him, which is a bit different from what we normally get for characterizations of Sonic. Usually he's up for jumping right in and being the hero, like, almost immediately. But this time he's a little bit more reserved. He more or less wants to, like, run away, but then realizes that he can do more, that he can do a lot of good and do more for people and be a hero rather than, mm-hmm. you know, just running away from all of his problems.
Of course, this time it's because we're getting an origin story.
Right.
And we've gotten a far more introspective take on his character, you know, him being a stranger in a strange land, living on the fringe, desperately wanting to be part of something more. And that alone is just so different.
Yeah.
Than anything else. It's interesting. I like it. It's a neat take on the character. I'm not sure how I feel about his crazy, weird electricity powers. I mean, it's nice enough that it's there to explain why he doesn't just automatically win at everything. He has to kind of like charge up, I guess. And putting it as an emotional base is interesting.
Kind of reminds me of Thor, actually.
Yeah. I mean, it works fine for the film. But at the big finale fight, when he's, you know, charging up, I'm looking at the scene going, if they bring in Super Sonic in the sequel, he's going to look freaking amazing. If this is what baseline Sonic looks like, Super Sonic's going to look insane.
Yeah.
And then the follow-up thought was, if they drag Shadow into this mess and give him the same kind of thing, it's going to be hilarious to watch him angst out and just start crackling like a piece of tinfoil in a microwave.
It's, yeah, that very good, yes. That's funny.
I've had a lot of people asking on Twitter, you know, what do you think of, you know, the new take on the lore? Or there was one in particular saying, you know, what do you think of a film that doesn't use any of the old lore? And it's like, well, on the one hand, none of the spinoff material really has used the lore.
No.
I mean, if you want to boil it down to Sonic fights Robotnik, then yeah, that's it. But SATA M didn't use any of the game lore. Sonic Underground certainly didn't.
No.
Sonic X is, I guess, the closest to the main line, but even then, it very quickly branched into its own nonsense. The Archie books, both iterations, way, way off base. The IDW book, yeah, we started out much closer to the game material, but we've skewed darker than most of the material. So there is no real, like, one could even argue the games have gone off of the base.
Well,
modern versus classic. So, I mean, where do you draw the line?
The original storyline is, like, what, Sonic living in a hedge in the middle of Nebraska and stuff like that? And this movie might actually skew closer to that than anything else is done.
And then you've got, like, Longclaw, who might be kind of a descendant of Old Man Owl from the OAV in terms of character origins. That's a bit of a stretch.
There's some really weird stuff going on in there. I don't know what's going on with that.
It's also funny looking at how many bullets we dodged, because Aaliyah managed to find something last night. The whole sequence with the echidnas, which I was marking out over.
Yeah, I thought that was like, holy crap, echidnas are here? Whoa.
It wasn't echidnas initially. It was some kind of crazy lizard wizard.
Right. Okay, yeah, I saw that too.
And Longclaw very clearly is not in the Sonic style.
Mm-mm.
So my guess is she's like the last holdover of the, we're going to take a realistic approach. And, you know, since she was a movie original, they didn't really need to alter her too much. And the echidnas, who famously were destroyed by seeking out great power, make enough sense coming after Little Blue Electrocog. So it's interesting what has been patched in, and I really wonder how it will be followed up on, if at all, if we get a sequel, which I'm assuming we will. Carrey has said he would sign back on. It's doing gangbusters in the theater. I would imagine we're going to get a Sonic 2 PDQ. Oh,
well, I mean, they kind of left that open. They left it. The ending of this movie is very open-ended in terms of sequel possibilities. So, yes, we probably will.
Well, so it was a Mario Brother movie, but we never got that.
Well, that was a critical and financial failure compared to this, which has been a critical and financial success. So I think the likelihood of a sequel is a bit higher in terms of this movie.
I really dug, I'm not going to be able to pronounce the man's name right now, I apologize, Lee Majdub?
Yeah, the
Agent Stone.
Like the henchman character? Yeah, Agent Stone, yeah, the henchman character.
The snivelly of the movie, if you will.
Kinda, yeah.
That was a fun dynamic, and that was a great way of illustrating Robotnik's just baseline nastiness, the hubris, the egotism, and the abusiveness is like, yeah, okay, I dig it.
That's one thing about Robotnik. He always like hates his henchmen and abuses them. That's his thing.
And the whole bit with the latte.
Yeah.
That's quintessential Eggman screaming about how much he enjoys it. I love their dynamic, and I kind of hate that he gets lost in the third act. There's no room for him, clearly.
No, yeah.
It's also weird saying Robotnik again, because the name has been out of circulation, more or less, since 2001. It's like, the fight is over. It's Eggman. Get over it. No, it's Robotnik. Here he is again.
Yeah, but Sonic calls him Eggman multiple times, so, you know.
Yeah, so we'll see if that sticks, but
Which is kind of what he did in Sonic Adventure, actually, because they were like, oh, it's Dr. Robotnik, Dr. Robotnik. Someone, and then all of a sudden Sonic calls him Eggman, and it's like, well, that's the transition point. That's what happened. And now it's Eggman forever, right from that moment on.
I guess Sonic Generations was the last hurrah for that.
Yeah, maybe.
It's Dr. Robotnik. Nobody calls me that anymore. It's like, see, can we please move on? I don't care if you like Robotnik better. Stop debating about it in my Twitter threads.
You gotta mute those, man. You just gotta mute them.
I can't mute the feedback of the peoples.
Yeah, you can. You can mute that specific conversation.
That and the green eyes.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I was like, there are points where Sonic's eyes glow blue when he's charging up his electricity powers. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why are his eyes, shouldn't his eyes be glowing green? And then I was watching through the rest of the movie. And I'm like, yeah, his eyes are green in the other scenes. What's going on there? But whatever, it's fine.
It's just as crazy zippity zap powers.
Blue lightning powers cause blue eyes. Cool, got it. I guess that's how it works.
But all the callbacks, the Hyper Potions track at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
the little piano bit of Green Hill at the end.
I'm kind of surprised we did not get more musical cues, more based on the games.
Nah, maybe in the sequel.
Because I mean, I could definitely hear like. Maybe you could like incorporate some of the boss themes into, you know, the Robotnik scenes. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
Just have them like really kind of in the background there. You wouldn't notice it so much. Some of those scenes, the music in them kind of reminded me of the Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog theme, kind of. Reminded me of those, but not, it wasn't overt enough to really be an obvious reference. I kind of like some of the other references, like Hilltop Road.
And, yeah.
You know, the fact that the town is called Green Hills, which is a little on the nose, but whatever, it's fine.
There's one of the spiky flowers hanging up in the window of the police precinct.
Yeah, yep. I'm going to have to probably watch it again, or at least watch one of those reference videos that cover all of them, because there's probably little ones everywhere that I missed.
The Circuit Breaker had Badniks on there?
Yes, I did see that. Yep. Thought that was pretty good. I'm trying to remember any other ones. I'm sure somebody will list them all, but yeah, there's some really good ones in there. Some nice little touches and little references that were good. Really good. So fun fact, Ian, did you know this? One Kath Soucie is the voice of Longclaw.
Okay.
So the voice of Sally.
Oh, really?
Yeah. As like, really? So Sally is the voice of Sonic's surrogate mom. Interesting. Yeah. Very, very interesting. I couldn't really tell while watching it. I suppose she kind of sounds like Sally, but it's been so long since Sally's been around that, and I haven't watched that AM in forever that, you know, kind of pinpointing the voice was kind of tough. But yeah, it's the same person.
And I haven't verified this myself, but others seem to point out very quickly that the voice actor for Grounder was one of the Pentagon officials.
Yes.
All right.
I don't know which one. I couldn't tell. But he's there.
Well, it's the one with the metal drills on his hands. It talks like this.
Of course. He talks like Big the Cat, except, like, I don't know, somehow both dumber and more eloquent. I don't know exactly. Interesting.
So that's fun.
Yes.
Yeah, that's really the film in a nutshell. It's fun.
Yeah. Don't go in expecting it to be, like, mind-blowing. It's not gonna be, like, a, you know, it's not a thing, like, Sonic isn't, like, all of a sudden like, considered high art or anything like that. This is just a fun family film. That's really all we can say about it, I guess. There's
it's a fun Sonic film, and really that's what it needs to be.
Right. It's a good like I said, it's a good like starting point. It's a good base for going into further exploring things in future films. So speaking of which, there were some very interesting developments at the end of the movie, Ian. Very end. Do we want to touch on those real quick?
I don't want to speculate too much, because with the origin story for Sonic as it is and the way Tails arrives, we're very clearly not going to get Tails' traditional origin story.
No.
And given how childlike Sonic is, I can't see that dynamic quite working like it traditionally does. But I don't know how much of that teaser is going to affect any sequel, you know?
Right.
It might just be that Tails shows up and, you know, it's been 2 years. Don't think too hard about it. This is how the movie goes. I don't know. We'll see. The echidnas alone have me intrigued because, as I said earlier, you know, they've been established multiple times in the franchise to have destroyed themselves in their pursuit of power. So since we saw them attacking young Sonic, they could very well have been wiped out in the intervening years, and Knuckles is still the last one. Or not. They might take it in a different direction. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the thing with Sonic. There's lots of potential. What are they going to do with it?
Right. Tails' interpretation is definitely more in line with modern.
Yeah.
With the modern characterization. So it'll be interesting to see how that characterization and Sonic's characterization interact with each other if they do much in a follow-up. So, interestingly enough, also, Tails, voiced by the same actress who plays him in the games.
Uh-huh.
So, I forget her name, what it is. I think it's Colleen Vidard or something like that. If I'm not mistaken. But yeah, she also voices Tails in this, which I thought was kind of interesting. I was kind of expecting a recast because, well, they recasted Sonic for the movie, so.
I wonder if the scene was added late in development, so they just went with
the standard. They just needed someone real quick to come fill it in.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. And then, of course, we have the reveal of actually just Eggman now at the end.
Mm-hmm.
When he grows the mustache out and, you know, has the whole goggles. He's bald now. He's
sending out stone on rock reconnaissance.
Yes.
Laughing at my own joke.
That's actually really good. Like, yeah, that's definitely some Eggman channeling going on there.
And there we have it again. He's kooky, but it's unsettling. He is clearly unhinged, and I dig it. I like it.
Yeah. This is great.
And I almost wish that's what we had from the start, but I also enjoy the journey we took to get there. See somewhat more put together Robotnik into I'm talking to a rock Eggman.
I kind of feel like it was a good way to have an Eggman origin story, which we really don't get very often, much less often than we get a Sonic origin story. So we almost never see an Eggman origin. So I think that was a good way to do it.
And it's notable that it's not a sympathetic origin.
No.
Like, Sonic the Comics, Dr. Kento Bor was a sympathetic origin. The plans for Sonic Boom seem to suggest a sympathetic origin. But this is just straight up, no, he's a jerk.
They even reference that he's an orphan halfway through the movie at the scene. The scene at the house, but they don't really make it a very, they really don't make him sympathetic at all, even after that, which is very good. I appreciate that. It's nice to have a villain just be a villain sometimes, you know?
not to be insensitive, but we should probably put the body on ice. That's dark, dude. Yeah, but it's funny.
That's Eggman. Yeah, that's him. That's him right there. I like it. I like it. All right. I think we've just about talked about everything we can, unless you have something else you want to add.
Nah, we've run our course. It's time for the Q&A.
Yep. Let's get down to business on the Q&A.
If you want your question answered here on the show, write to us at bumblecast@yahoo.com, at Twitter @bumblecast, anywhere in the YouTube comments, or if you're a patron, comments somewhere on the Patreon page or in the Q&A channel on the Discord. If you want your question answered sooner, become a $5 patron over at patreon.com/bumblecast, or send $5 our way through Ko-fi. That's ko-fi.com/bumblecast. Make sure to include your name and question so we know what the money is for. Few rules going in. Please check the FAQ on bumbleking.com before you send your questions in. It covers a lot of stuff that people have already asked. Check the last few episodes of the Bumblecast. We list all the questions with every episode, so make sure we haven't already answered your question. You can jump ahead to the Q&A in those episodes. We do all that we can to make it easy for you. And if you're asking about what might have happened in the old Archie books, that will be revealed in Lost Hedgehog Tales, which is on indefinite hiatus until things that are percolating behind the scenes finish percolating and become Sonic Ko-fi. I don't know where I'm going with this.
It's very blue. It leaves your it gives your mouth a weird color for like a few hours after you drink it. Yeah, that's totally.
I don't want to work with that mean bean machine.
Okay, yeah, don't do that. All right, let's get a priority Q&A. This first one comes.
Yeah,
let's do it. This is from Diane W. Ever since the incident, in quotes, in number 19, and how people were upset with Shadow's portrayal in the same issue, I've gotten pretty upset with this myself, especially since I realized after reading comments online about this that it is a huge betrayal to the character development he had in SA2 Heroes, his own title game, and even 06. I just wish Sega can look back at those games and see who the real Shadow the Hedgehog is, and it hurts my heart every time I think about it. I know I shouldn't be asking for spoilers for future issues of the comics, but at the very least, answer my question without revealing too much. Will there be a scene in the eventual Fallout/Recovery arc of the Metal Virus Saga where Shadow gets called out for his arrogance and stupidity, again back in number 19, and gets questioned for his current behavior?
Maybe. Shadow is weird in that of all the Sonic characters, he has had the most notes. Of anybody, bar none. I mean, the Deadly Six, we got some very specific direction here and there. Some notes occasionally on Cream. We had a bit of a back and forth over what Knuckles would do here in the current storyline and coming issues. But Shadow, for whatever reason, is under tighter scrutiny, it feels like, than anybody else. It's weird. But there is a moment that I'm hoping will get approved. We'll see. I really can't predict. It's become a very, very tricky balancing act. I thought I had gotten things figured out in the two-parter. Well, it's more of a one-parter because Shadow only appears at the end of the one issue. He and Sonic actually interact in the following one when they're out in Windmill Village. I thought I had gotten figured out what Sega wants from the character now, but I guess if you look at what very little we see in Forces and the far more confrontational single note we got in Team Racing, I think that's the direction they want to go now. So I, you know, it's the same as it ever was. I'll do what I can with what I'm given.
I think Shadow's characterization has been the least consistent over his across his appearances, to be honest. Like, between Sonic Adventure 2, Heroes, and his own game, and 06, and even beyond that, he's always, like, just weirdly different. I mean, like, his characterization in Shadow the Hedgehog is all over the place because there's the morality system of it, even. So, I mean, you can't say like it's not consistent to his portrayal in that game, because there is no consistent portrayal in that game. So it's just weird.
Like I kind of miss SA2 Shadow, because he had more range and personality. He was snarky.
Right.
He had a bit of a swagger to him that we don't really see again after that. But I guess 06 would be my personal favorite interpretation, because he has that reserve and moodiness to contrast Sonic. But there's also this underlying dark heroic angle that's fun to work with. It's basically what I was using in the Archie books. But that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. Question mark.
Well, let's go to the next question from Andrew D. After the events of Worlds Collide rebooted Sonic's multiverse, I recall the idea of a multiverse getting scrapped due to issues with the real world ownership of the Cosmic Interstate. Then we wound up getting some sort of multiverse with various Capcom and Sega franchises in Worlds Unite. Can you share or explain how the multiverse, or whatever it was, worked after the reboot? Did Blaze's world exist in its own multiverse alongside the other franchises?
I think you're overcomplicating the issue. Multiverse is multiverse.
Multiverses tend to get overcomplicated.
I mean, think of it as a ball pit. You know, each ball is its own universe. They're all kind of just wang-jangled together. Using the Cosmic Interstate as a specific plot device was off the table, but that's because everything pre-reboot was off the table. But in terms of, you know, how the multiverse worked post-reboot, it was just, there's multiple universes. That's it. There's a Street Fighter universe, there's a Sonic universe, there's Blaze's universe. It's a multiverse. There are multiple universes.
And you can open portals between them and travel between them by going through the portals. There you go. Pretty basic. Works for me. What about Blaze's world? Is that a multiverse thing, or is that like within?
The games say that she's in her own dimension, so I'm counting that as a different universe.
Okay. Well, there we go. Here's one from John B. I know I'm a little late on this, but before I get to my question, congratulations on launching Drogroon. I'm really enjoying it so far.
Thank you so much, and it's never too late.
In the backup story to Archie Sonic number 281, Tails mentions he sees Bunny as his big sister and overall seems very close to her. Does this mean that Tails was closer to Bunny than the other Freedom Fighters that aren't Sonic in Volume 2? Or does he just consider all of them as siblings?
Yes to both. I was thinking that they were all kind of like a loose-knit family unit sort of thing. But because both he and Bunny experienced being kind of outliers because of their physical differences, that they had a little bit deeper connection than, say, Tails and Antoine. I'm not saying that, you know, she's the favorite or that there's this deep bond that can never be broken. It's just they connected on a certain level that the others did not.
All right. Next one comes from the Imagine Breaker 121212. I may be late on this matter, really late, but what's a franchise like Sonic where everything is in the miniseries is canon? Brand manager Aaron Weber made that official, and considering his status quo with reaching out to Naka, Iizuka, and Sega, I take it as official via that and his position to do so, and that being his job. A partition where two different things happen at once are put in as parallel universes, like, for example, Sonic Boom or Mania Adventures and Mania Plus on Steam confirmed. It truly sets a standard on how to organize this omnidirectional canon. It would make sense things like Crisis City and Sonic Generations is some parallel universe, multiverse, or alternate timeline now, which means, oh no, Iblis still destroyed the world and made it into an epitome of eternal darkness, and Mephiles is still around, Sonic Runners and 06 Silver, apparently. What are your thoughts?
Number one, Mr. Weber's PR company does not set the canon for the franchise.
No.
They are
no.
PR. They're public relations. They're the hype machine.
I think when they say everything is canon, that's partially a joke. that's been taken too seriously.
I don't want to put words in Aaron's mouth.
Right. Right.
I believe his intention with everything in canon was a cheeky way of saying, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And because the Sonic canon cannot be reconciled.
Yeah.
There are plot holes. There are contrivances that just don't sync up because there hasn't been a singular unified vision over the past 29 years. Some stuff just doesn't fit. When you point out, well, this isn't simpatico. The answer is kind of I wouldn't really try to make a phone game fit in with the same mainline canon as everything else. I'm guilty of this too. I really want to find the through lines. I am still adamant that you can find a decent subplot running from SA2 through Sonic 06 with Shadow. It's there. I can see it. Don't you believe me? But it's the two worlds thing, everything that fans have pointed out going, buh, is just that. It's buh. So instead of trying to reconcile it all and, retcon all these games into somehow making sense with their variable emerald colors and number count and classic versus modern and yada, yada, yada. Everything is canon. Hakuna Matata. Don't worry, be happy. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be, will be.
I kind of read it as like, whatever you want to be canon is canon to you. Have fun. Make up your own canon. Don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. That's what I interpreted that as anyway. I think people took it a little too literally. So they're kind of hung up on that. But to me, it was just like, there's no way to reconcile all this stuff. There's just no way. So just have fun. Make up your own canon. You can do whatever you want to do with it. Take pictures with it or shoot things out of it. It depends on what kind of canon you're making.
I mean, I see a fair number of folks online thinking that there is some master plan behind the scenes, that there has always been a certain intention. And then we found out a few months ago that when they were developing Sonic Heroes, there was apparently a very big debate on whether or not Shadow was still alive. Mm-hmm. Which right there is like, okay, there there was no connection between the two until they made it. So I don't know, just enjoy what we have is really, and this is coming from the guy whose career has been trying to untangle this web and make it make sense. Trust me, I have stared into that abyss, and that abyss has stared right back.
Yeah, it's like the Zelda timeline, and like the way people try to reconcile that. It's like, even Nintendo could barely do it because clearly they did not originally design all these with these connections in mind.
And then Breath of the Wild comes out and just like,
yeah, exactly. There's just no way. There's no way. They did not come up with some grand master plan at the beginning and then stick to it for 30 years. No, this is it. It's all just all over the place. Just enjoy the games, whatever. However they're connected, have fun with it. Just make up your own canon. It's fine. All right, with that, let's go ahead and get into the standard Q&A. First one comes to us from Hangouts with Harry. Hello, it's me again. Just want to know, does the whole Tangle and Whisper miniseries take place in the Metal Virus Saga or before?
Takes place, I would say, kind of tangentially towards the beginning. Clearly before Sonic was infected. Probably around the time Eggman is researching and testing it.
All right, next question comes from Zurich Studios. Any plans for Marine and Big? From what I've noticed, they're the only modern cast members that haven't shown up in the book, minus cover cameos.
Big, definitely. Marine, I'm sad. My attempts to pitch her first appearance in the book got cut. But I tried to weasel in a sly reference, so we'll see if that gets through approvals.
You're trying to call Marine a weasel? She's a raccoon. Please show her some respect.
Never.
Oh, okay. Speaking of which, where's Sticks?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, Ian, where's
Styx? I struck out twice with trying to bring Styx in, so now I'm kind of biding my time for my third attempt.
Okay, good. At least you've tried. Next question comes from Jay Chance. Ian, what are your thoughts on the characterization of Shadow in the Twitter takeovers, where he gives his business to indie drinks and mom-and-pop stores, and he eats chili dog with peppers and even more cheese to prove he's better than Sonic? Will we get something like that in the comics anytime soon?
Oh, good gravy, no. There's no way I could get away with that.
Aww.
Take the Twitter takeovers as just a fun, self-aware lampoon of the material.
Yeah.
I don't think it's meant to be taken seriously. It's just a fun thing. It's the off panels in audio form.
Although having that characterization of Shadow would be very, very entertaining.
If and when we get the day that things are loosened up on Shadow, I totally want him in the background somewhere just munching on coffee beans. Don't even call attention to it. Just he has a handful just har, 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 in the back.
I see that. And our final question on this episode comes from Snowrunt Pyro. I was rereading Worlds Unite recently and realized that Crush Crawfish from Mega Man X3 and Gravity Antonian from Mega Man X8 are completely absent. Was this an accident, or was there some weird reason why they didn't appear? On the same note, were you guys not allowed to use Dr. Doppler, Hymax, and Red, considering they're more important than just some normal Mavericks and seem less like accidental exclusions? Or were they just not included for whatever reason? It's probably just because there's so many freaking characters.
Well, with Crush and Gravity, those were art errors. They were meant to be in there.
Okay.
And it's been so long since I wrote that cavalcade of characters. I don't remember where they were supposed to be. They were absolutely supposed to be in the big, spread with all the Mavericks showing up. But we got a couple of redundancies in there instead. And that's just an art error. That's too bad.
And there's just so many characters that it's really hard to keep track of, even for
guys
like John Gray. I'm sure lose track of things and are like, what?
Like ears and thumbs, eh, John?
Yeah, wink, wink. Yeah.
With Doppler and Hymax specifically, I didn't want to bring them in because they were more of a big deal than a regular Maverick, and Red. Red is kind of a special case by himself. I feel like just throwing him in with the mix with your regular Mavericks would be unfitting. But that also, I can already hear some of the comments on that saying, well, if you did that, why did you have like M. Bison in the background when he is such a power player? And that admittedly is one of the missteps with the crossover, is I wanted to acknowledge as much fan service as I could with it. But I was too busy thinking about what I could do. I didn't think about what I should do. To pull a Jurassic Park here. I probably should have dialed it back a bit.
It is tough, though, to kind of reconcile having all these characters you can play with and then just like, oh, where do I fit them in? I don't know. So, yeah, like, I understand.
I wanted to have, as much equal representation of the franchises as I could. At least two from every franchise, to really show them off. But then you ran into stuff like Skies of Arcadia and Breath of Fire. And it's like, how do you pick? And then with Street Fighter, there was a lot of other stuff kind of going behind the scenes with the Street Fighter license at the time and Archie. So it was kind of sort of testing the waters for other stuff, which is why they kind of got preferential treatment. And if I could go back and do it all again, I would probably overhaul 90% of it. A lot of it was out of my hands, but especially when we got to the big finale, as cool as it was, and my God, what Tyson did with that 2-page spread was art.
It's very good. Yes.
It could have been a better crossover.
There were still a lot of fun moments, though. Things I liked seeing, like Sonic meeting up with Alex Kidd. That still warms my heart. Still made me smile. All right, and that's it for this week's episode of the Bumblecast. We got some things to get out of the way before we leave, though. Ian?
Absolutely. We need to say thank you to all the wonderful patrons who make this show possible. Big thank you to Daniel H., Eric F., Connell T., Alex P., Zastando 27, Diane W., Justin S., Andrew D., Blue Title Gamer, Coupling Crew 128, Chris A., John B., Jennifer R., Revan the Light, Lisa M., Papadripodopoulos, Frederick, Scruffy Matt, BC the Unicorn, Duas Disden, Dave M., Mike B., Samuel P., Sam Cybercat, Digama F., Wow, Brody M., Final Neil, Justin G., Dan M., S., Silly String, Takaro, Lee HK, Chevelle, Don B., Sin Fritz, John M., James K., Adam BT, and Overthinking Films.
Thank you, everybody, for your continued or new support, or your previous support if you were a previous patron.
Welcome back.
We may not have mentioned you, but if you come back and you're welcome, and if you're a previous patron who's no longer a patron, that's okay. We still love you, too. Where can the people find you, Ian?
Check out my Twitter at IanFlynnBKC or head over to my website, bumbleking.com. That's got the release schedule of everything I've got coming out, public announcements, con appearances. Oh, right. That reminds me. If you're in the Toronto area, I'm going to be doing Toronto Comic Con this March. Check out the website for details on that. Also, head over to drogune.com. That's DROGUNE. That is the webcomic I'm doing with artist superstar Adam Bryce Thomas, fantasy science epic. It's got free updates on Friday. If you're a patron, you get monthly gift art from Adam himself. It's a good deal all around. What about you, Kyle?
You can find me on Twitter at KyleJCRB. You can also head on over to KNGI.org, where you can find archived episodes of the Bumblecast and many other shows, including my other show, Nitro Game Injection, which is a video game music live show that streams Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time over there at KNGI.org. You can find all the links and everything over there. Also, we're coming up very close here to not only the 400th episode of NGI, but also the 17th anniversary of the KNGI network.
Good night.
So that's going to be something pretty exciting happening. That's in March. March 15th was the first episode of my show that I ever did. So I consider that as like the anniversary point. So that'll be coming up here soon. And then I'm like six episodes away from 400. So that's the anniversary and like major milestone episodes always seem to coincide almost. So it gets pretty wild, but I think I'm going to keep most of the celebration to 400 specifically. So I'm going to try to have some special guests and do some fun stuff. So we'll see how it goes, but hope to see you over there and go check it out.
Very cool. You can follow the show on Twitter at Bumblecast, contact it at bumblecast@yahoo.com. You can listen to episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, YouTube, KNGI.org, and just about anywhere else.
Yeah, we're out there. Just search for it. You'll find it. Don't forget to also go check out the Bumble store at shop.spreadshirt.com/bumblestore. We can get you some Bumble gear and deck out your house in some Bumble accoutrement and whatever else you want to do. You can get you like a Bumble bumper sticker and say Bumblecast on the back of your car. Why not? And then people will be like, what's a Bumblecast? And you'll have to explain it. And then they'll be like, oh, it's a podcast? Great. Another person recommending me a podcast. You think I have time to listen to a podcast? Well, this one is only an hour every 2 weeks, so hopefully that helps. But yeah, that's apparently the new thing, Ian, is like people recommending you a podcast is now the new thing where people are like, I'm tired of people recommending me podcasts. I don't want to listen to podcasts. Mm-hmm, whatever. Mm-hmm. Listen to this podcast, dang it. And watch our streams.
Exactly. Bumblecast Gaming Live is on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/BumblecastGaming. Sundays, usually around 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure to check out the Twitter feed to see specifically if we have some kind of hiccup, which happens. We also have other streams throughout the week as time allows. So again, keep a weather eye on the Twitter channel to see if and when we're going to be streaming anything.
Yes. Keep an eye on the Twitter, and don't forget you can also follow the Twitch channel and you'll get notifications when we're going live, so be sure to keep an eye out for those. I'm going to be streaming, like I said at the top of the episode, I'm going to be streaming Sonic 1 sometime this week as part of the Sonic movie festivities, so hope you guys will tune in for that. I'm going to have some fun and hopefully beat it pretty quickly. We'll see. So I consider myself fairly good at most of the classic Sonic games, so I probably won't take too long to beat it. So we'll see, though. Labyrinth Zone might give me some trouble, but we'll see.
That's going to wrap us up for this episode of the Bumblecast. We'll see you in 2 weeks for another episode and Bumblecast Gaming all in the meanwhile. Thank you so much for listening. Have a lovely evening, afternoon, morning, whenever you're listening to this, and we'll catch you later.
See ya! Gotta go fast! I don't know what that was at the end there.
It was a callback to one of the most adorable parts of the movie where JoJo's running around going, gotta go fast, gotta go fast, gotta go fast!
A movie that takes place in taking place in Sonic's world could be interesting if they do a follow-up.
It will probably be stuff bleeding into the human world to keep production costs low, but
of course,
maybe we'll get kind of a third act finale in Sonic's world.
Yeah, could be interesting. I did think it looked pretty good, though. Sonic's world definitely gave that Sonic Generations Green Hill vibe. It was nice. Good to see. Oh, I just wish this movie came out like 25 years ago. I'd probably be more excited for it as a kid. But, you know.
Yeah, but I don't think the CG was quite there at the time.
It would not have looked nearly as good. So, yeah, there's that.
You've been listening to The Bumblecast, a co-production of Bumble King Comics and the KNGI Network. Original theme music composed by Ken Coda Snyder. Remixed intro by T-Lopes. Find out more information, along with podcast feeder links, MP3 downloads, and more at bumbleking.com and kngi.org.
I just watched a Mortal Kombat movie recently, and the movie itself, actually not a terrible adaptation of Mortal Kombat, and not a particularly bad movie. It's one of the better video game adaptations.
It's decent enough. It's watchable.
Yeah, it holds up fairly well. It's entertaining. It's silly, but Mortal Kombat also very silly. It fits perfectly with the tone of the games. It's absolutely ridiculous. So yeah, I quite like Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat Annihilation, on the other hand, I liked it, but for different reasons, because it was so hilariously bad that it just loops back around to being hilarious. It's basically, I call that one Front Flip the Movie, because everything's flipping. Everybody's flipping, front flipping everywhere. They're jumping off of things and flipping. There's even a few back flips, but it's mostly front flips. They're doing a lot of front flips in that movie. It's pretty wild. But yeah, it's just silly. But the original, not so bad.